Want to let you know that we are expecting Donald Trump and Israeli President Netanyahu to make a joint statement in a few minutes. We will go to that live when it happens. For now, though, some news from the Supreme Court. A divided U.S. Supreme Court today rejected two Republican-drawn congressional districts in North Carolina, saying they relied too heavily on race. Both districts were majority black, and both were rather bizarrely shaped. The practical consequences may be limited because a new map was already in place. That new map was used in last year's election, and Republicans won 10 of 13 seats in North Carolina. But the case produced an unusual and perhaps intriguing alignment, with conservative Justice Clarence Thomas joining the court's liberal wing in voting to throw out both of the challenged districts. With us to help sort all this out is Nathaniel Persily, a professor and election law expert at Stanford University Law School. Nate, thanks as always for joining us. Why don't you just start by giving us a brief explanation of what the court held? There were two different districts and two different rationales for what the court did.
Well, the court once again is reviewing the North Carolina redistricting plan. And I say once again because over the last 20 years, it has looked at these districts five or six times. And what they said was that the first district, but the first district and the 12th district were unconstitutional because they excessively used race. And the first district was unconstitutional because you could not blame the district on the Voting Rights Act, which is what the state attempted to do. They said you had to draw an over 50% African-American district to comply with the Voting Rights Act. The Supreme Court said, no, you did not. And so because you've used race so extensively, that district's unconstitutional. With respect to the 12th district, they said if North Carolina defended it as part of its partisan gerrymander, saying it was drawing a very safe Democratic district. The court here in a 5-3 vote said that the district was an unconstitutional racial gerrymander because you were essentially using race as a proxy for partisanship. And so just because you are drawing districts that might harm Democrats by packing them together doesn't get you out of the fact that race and party are so highly correlated in North Carolina, in that district, that it still runs afoul of the Constitution.
And what in all that, Nate, would you pick out as the most important or most surprising part of this ruling, or perhaps none of it was surprising? What's your biggest takeaway?
Yeah. As you suggested, one of the more interesting facts of this case is the final vote on District 12, that Justice Clarence Thomas, who's generally pretty conservative on constitutional questions, joined with the four more liberal justices to strike down District 12. And it shows you a kind of strange bedfellows in cases like this, where Justice Thomas, who advocates a colorblindness approach to redistricting and other kinds of government action, thought that this drawing of a majority African-American district could not be justified. Whereas the Democrats, or the more liberal justices on the court were offended by the district because it sort of discriminated against African Americans by packing them in too high concentrations. And so that was, I think, the most significant sort of fact about this case, was that you had this strange confluence of liberals and conservatives.
Reading Justice Alito's dissent, and I haven't read the entirety of it, but he made me think, looking at it, that maybe this is a fairly significant deal. He said that the court had previously rejected a very similar challenge to the same district, and that in the previous decision, the court had said the challengers had to come up with an alternative map that met what the political motives of the people who drew the map, while also not having the racial problems. Is Justice Alito right that this was a real change by the court?
Well, it depends on whether we sort of take that original decision seriously or literally. I think that what the original
decision suggests. We can't do both?
Well, I think that the original decision was dealing with the facts as they existed in that litigation. And the argument that was brought there was that, well, look, you could have accomplished the drawing of a Democratic district without as significant a the argument was that the rule would be if you could show another map that accomplished the same, say, partisan gerrymander, while at the same time lowering the African-American population in these districts, that would be a way of challenging the district. What Justice Alito is basically saying here is that you have kind of on the sly overturned that decision. Justice Kagan, in response, is saying, no, the facts were different there. just because you can't put forward another plan doesn't mean that it is a safe district. Just to cut through the legalese there, I don't think that aspect of the decision is terribly significant going forward in terms of the numbers of districts that it implicates. The more significant part of this decision is whether you can use race as a pretext for a partisan gerrymander, or partisanship as a pretext for a racial gerrymander. And so these situations where race and partisan preference are so highly correlated happens frequently throughout the South. And so that will cast a shadow over the next redistricting process in 2 or 3 years.
Well, Ken, say we're in a similar situation where Republicans control the redistricting. Are they going to be able to get around this without too much trouble? Part of what the court said here was it was pointing to instances where North Carolina lawmakers explicitly said they were doing things for racial reasons. Will Republicans just be able to get around it by now just saying, we're doing it for political reasons?
Well, that's the strange pairing of these two districts, because they admitted to using racial motivations in the first district, and then they said it was partisan motivations in the 12th district. And so what this case stands for is that you can't completely get around it just by saying you are doing it for partisan motivations, because if, in effect, what you're doing is discriminating against African Americans in order to serve a partisan interest, you still could be attacked for an unconstitutional racial gerrymander. But you have to understand that the line drawers are sort of damned if they do, damned if they don't, because if they don't draw these majority African-American districts, they're going to be sued under Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act, which forces the creation of majority-minority districts under certain circumstances. But then if they do create these over 50% districts, they're going to be sued under the Constitution for discriminating against African-Americans. And so, this is an unsustainable equilibrium over the long term, because they realize that there's so many legal constraints that contradict each other.
Is this coalition, this unusual coalition that we talked about a couple minutes ago with Justice Thomas joining the court's liberal wing, is this something that you would imagine we might see again in this rather complicated area of the law?
Well, it's interesting, because Justice Thomas really thinks the Voting Rights Act is unconstitutional, not just Section 5, the sort of famous section that was struck down a few years ago in the Shelby County case, which was a provision that only applied to parts of the South and elsewhere. But he actually thinks the intentional drawing of majority-minority districts under any circumstances is unconstitutional. That's very different than the more liberal justices here, who think that you should have to draw districts like that in areas where there's significant racial polarization. And by that I mean that say, African-Americans and whites vote for different candidates. The question in this case is, what happens when you have a significant number of whites who are willing to vote for the candidate that the African-Americans prefer? And in those situations, the courts, the more liberal justices say, well, it's wrong and discriminatory to create these overly packed African-American districts. For Justice Thomas, he doesn't think you should consider race at all in the redistricting process, or for that matter, in any government decision-making, including, say, affirmative action and elsewhere. And so I think that this is that coalition will continue to be viable so long as that is the issue that they're dealing with, which is the over-focusing on race in the redistricting process.
Nate, let me ask you about an issue that's has been on the back burner but may come to the court, which is political gerrymandering. There are some cases out there, including one in North Carolina, that they're trying to get the court to say at some point gerrymandering can be so partisan that violates the Constitution. Does this ruling, did you see anything in this ruling that says anything about that issue one way or another and suggests how the court might come out?
Well, one thing I found interesting is that Justice Kennedy is in the dissent here. And so that does suggest that he was more willing to uphold these districts, which were predicated on the notion that, yes, you could justify an otherwise unconstitutional racial gerrymander through partisan reasons. I might have thought that Justice Kennedy and Justice Thomas would have switched places in this case. And Justice Kennedy is really the critical vote on the partisan gerrymandering question. I think everybody who looks at that issue knows that if the Supreme Court is going to make waves here and strike down in particular the Wisconsin partisan gerrymander, it's going to be because Justice Kennedy wants to take that leap. He wrote the critical opinion 10 years ago in this case called Beef versus Jubilee, where they said, well, we don't want to shut off the possibility of bringing these cases against partisan gerrymanders, but we don't know what the standard is. And so maybe he will have decided that there is a standard for unconstitutional partisan gerrymandering. What's really interesting about these cases is that they do highlight the way that partisan gerrymandering cases are already being litigated, and that's through racial discrimination claims. And so if you are a disgruntled partisan minority in a particular state, you bring cases under the Constitution of the Voting Rights Act, you just don't call them partisan gerrymandering cases. You say they're racial gerrymandering, Voting Rights Act violation.
I want to thank our guest, Nathaniel Persily. He is a professor at Stanford Law School and one of the people we love to turn to help us sort out important developments on the subject of voting rights. Nate, thanks very much for joining us.